We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
Be afraid.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Ghouls and gore. And sometimes a little more. My Bloody Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of My Bloody Podcast. Oh, my goodness. So excited to do this. This is episode 92. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm joined by the host with the most, the man who I want to go on a road trip across the country in an 18-wheeler. We've got our trucker hats on. We've got our snacks, our beverages, and our sweet. Yes. Hey, Candy Cane. Preston Barta, how are you?
I'm doing so good. It's nice to be back here.
It really, really is. Folks, it has been since early August, since the last time we, Preston and I, have done an actual full episode of My Bloody Podcast. Too long, buddy, too long.
Yeah. A lot's happened. We've seen a lot of things.
We have seen a ton of things, but we're very happy to be back. Things happened in the world. There was a new year. There's a new president. Preston's got his Manta hat on.
Yeah. Thanks, Borat.
Yeah. Thanks, Borat. It's good. It's good to be here. So My Bloody Podcast, the main feature presentation on this 92nd episode is 2001's Joyride with Paul Walker and Steve Zahn and Lily Sobieski, directed by John Dahl. We'll get to that a little later. We've got bloody recommendations. We've got bloody tunes, a bloody question. But first, the bloody bits of news. We've welcomed everybody. It's been since August. The last movie we fully did was Critters 2, which was a fun one, right?
Yeah. Man, that feels like so long ago. I mean, it was.
It was. August, September, October, November, December. I mean, it's been like half a year, like 6 months. That's weird. But I talk to Preston every day, so it doesn't feel like it's been that long since I've actually talked to him. So, Yeah. So it's good. It's wonderful. Let's get to a little bit of the news, a little bit of bloody bits of news. First,
6 months of news to go through.
Yeah, there is. First, we have to talk about, I mean, it might be horror. It's in that realm. But Godzilla versus King Kong has been talked about for a long time. You know, we've had two Godzilla movies. We've had Kong Skull Island movie all in the same universe. And now they're putting them both together. This has been delayed before a couple times. And now it looks like this year, actually in March, is going to be released on HBO Max. They showed a trailer, full-length trailer, and in my opinion, it just looks like sweet, super fun, the same way Pacific Rim looked super fun, just like carnage and big things destroying everything in cities. And I'm a big fan of Kong. I'm a big fan of Godzilla. So I'm excited. The trailer looks good. The action looks great. The acting and dialogue, not so much, but that's my take. Preston.
Yeah. I think it looks fun. It surprised me. I guess I'm one of the very few who wasn't a huge fan of Kong Skull Island. I know a lot of other people are. I did not like the first Godzilla, but I kind of liked the second one. I guess because it, as you just hinted at with some of the things that you see in this new trailer, the dialogue's not good, but it's got so many good people in it, and it's just monsters fighting each other. So I kind of had a good time with Godzilla King of Monsters, and this one just seems like it's going to be more of that, but it's coming from a filmmaker who both Brian and I very much admire and have spoken to, Adam Wingard, who directed The Guest and Blair Witch. And you can tell right away when watching the trailer that he's bringing some of that style that we like him for, especially like this celebration of the 80s and this nostalgic kind of feel. I was listening to a podcast and they called it like nostalgia. And so it just kind of feels a bit like that, where it's like a bit shiny, but it kind of hits at what you love about this particular genre. So seeing this lit up Tokyo or wherever it's placed, takes place during this particular fight scene of them fighting in the city where it's all lit up in these neon colors. Looks like a Joel Schumacher movie. It just looks fun. And there's some moments in there where I was just like, oh man, this is going to have like those jaw dropping moments for me, like the Avengers coming out at the end, or when Winter Soldier flips around the bike in Civil War, where you're just like, oh. So I feel like it's going to have those like holy shit moments that we like to hold you over while you deal with a bunch of exposition and bad characters and things like that. So it's fine. I know what to expect from it now in comparison to when I first started out watching this, where you were a little bit let down by it. So I think they're just kind of taking it a bit further and further and still kind of gauging what this is going to be. So, and I'm kind of interested to see like why Godzilla is bad. And there's some hints at that it's going to be the mechanical version of Godzilla that they've built.
Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, Mechagodzilla. So there's that possibility, and then we'll actually see a legit fight. But I'm curious if anybody's actually going to win too, because a lot of these versus movies, it's either a tie or mostly just a tie.
Yes, right. So my prediction, I put $50 on it with some friends that they're going to end up in a tag team match together fighting a bigger foe.
Like the machine one. Yeah.
They're going to find out both of their mothers are named Mothra. Yeah, yeah. And they're going to be like, what? Let's team up. Did we just become best friends? And then hopefully that's the case. That's what I'm guessing.
Did you see that that tweet that I shared with you, where it's a GIF of when King Kong punches Godzilla, and it looks like, it really does look like King Kong or Godzilla's going in for a handshake.
Yes.
So King Kong's the bad guy here.
Yes, Kong's the bad guy. He's just, I don't know. Godzilla just wants a hug. He's been away. He's been swimming. Things are happening. And then Kong just doesn't know love, except if you're a really tiny, small little girl. Right. So
I gotta say that I wish I could see this in theaters.
Right. I've talked to a couple people who've watched the trailer, and I said, like, this is maybe one of the first films I really actually want to see, like, in an IMAX screen, because it's got this huge grand scope, you know, like any kind of Godzilla or King Kong movie, really. But it is, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Looks good. It looks good. I'm really real excited for it. And, I do want to see it in the theater. However, I'm really happy that I could watch it at home too, mm-hmm. Yeah. Right away, at least for this year. So that it'll be cool. But moving on from that, so we know the movie Spiral is coming out later this year. Spiral is the Chris Rock, Samuel Jackson horror film that's set in the Saw universe, like Saw, with the torture porn movies that there's been like 7 or 8 of. But I guess HBO Max, starting in February, are going to release every single Saw movie on HBO for everybody to watch, 1 through 8, I guess, 1 through 7. And then there's Jigsaw. So I'm excited about this. I actually have the Blu-ray set, but it'll be kind of nice for everybody to kind of reevaluate and revisit these movies, because I mean, they got out of hand, but they're still.
Chris Rock has watched all of them.
Yeah, of course. Sam Jackson and Chris Rock have definitely watched all these movies. I think most people have watched all these movies at least once. I think there comes a time like, oh, the horror movies. Yes, we've seen every Saw movie. There's like decent actors in them. There's like the guy from Gilmore Girls who's through several of them. Donnie Wahlberg's in them. I think there's something about like Jigsaw that kind of came like, you know, he can stand up there with like Jason and Freddy and Halloween. There's kind of like that. I mean, Saw had their own realm to do things. Like, it really became more of like torture stuff and not exactly supernatural. But I still like them, you know, in a certain way, even if it's just for like death scenes here and there and some of the latter ones. But I actually like the Jigsaw one. So I'm curious on what they're due with Spiral. I don't know. But I'm excited that they're all going to be on HBO. What do you think?
Yeah, I have the collection, but you and I have talked about this before. I have not seen them all. So I guess this lights a fire under my ass to try to get that done in time. Just in case there's like little nuggets here and there. I bet Chris Rock has seen them all. I don't know about Samuel Jackson. He strikes me as somebody who's like, yeah, I watched the first one and then the second one I checked out a bit. I don't know, but maybe.
I feel like just Samuel Jackson's been in every movie, so he watches every movie. So
I don't know, that'd be an interesting question to ask him.
Right? How many of these movies have you seen? So that's happening. And then I want to talk about a little bit, just if Preston has seen it. Have you seen the movie on Hulu called In and of Itself yet?
I tried really hard, but I had to watch one more thing, but I am going to watch it today for you.
Okay, good. So just a quick thing. Derek Delgadio's In and of Itself on Hulu. Please, one of the best things I've seen in a long time. Watch it. It's on Hulu. Go down to your nearest Hulu and watch In and of Itself. I think you'll love it. But moving on from that, let's jump into a little bit of the Scream Factory and Arrow Blu-ray releases, since we love talking about Blu-rays and the art and all the collector's editions that have come out. And since it's been all the way back in August, since we've kind of done a full show, there's been a lot of stuff that's really come out that's been really cool. So Preston, any couple of Blu-rays from Arrow that have come out, that are coming out, as well as from Scream Factory, that you just have to, that you're dying to tell everybody about?
So Scream Factory, Shout Factory, they've slowed down a bit. There's only a few things that they've released. The big ones, especially this month in January, it was the 4K releases of Prince of Darkness and They Live, which you can get at like Best Buy and various other places online.
Now they have already released these, but these are like they're finally in the 4K game. And then I think like a lot of boutique studios, they're adding like swag to it, like records and toys, right?
Yeah, something like that. But I already own, I have it on VHS. I have both of those movies on VHS. I have both of the regular versions that Scream Factory released with a slipcover, and I own them both on the Scream Factory Steelbook editions, and they're both restored to look good, and I know there'd probably be like a bit of a shine to it, and I like that they use the original artwork on both of them for the 4K release, but I haven't got it yet. But our friend of the show, James Cole Clay, has got both of them, and he says that they look pretty damn crisp. So,
oh, really?
So I may have to, but then I gotta be honest, like, I love They Live and I love Prince of Darkness, but I just don't know if I want a quadruple dip at this point.
Yeah, because there comes a time. No, I totally, I mean, you're talking, we're talking to each other where we have huge, huge collections, video collections. And there comes a time where you have to pick and choose what movies you want to own 10 times over. And then when these companies start releasing like, oh shit, I can get the record. Well, I already have the record. Do I need an action figure? Oh shit, it's in 4K. Do I need it in 4K? Do I need the steelbook with the new art? It just comes a time, when am I going to actually put in the 4K? Or is it going to be like the situation where like, well, they came with a digital copy, I don't want to get up from my chair or my couch, I'm just going to watch it digitally on the Vudu or the iTunes account and not put in the 4K. So, I mean, especially in a quarantine, or not quarantine, but in a pandemic, you're not really with other people to like bring out your collection and be like, hey, look at this, you know, look at the liner notes. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, I'm still stewing on like what I'm going to do there. But right now I think I'm pretty content with what I have, but moving on from there, Scream Factory has a few upcoming releases that are worthy of note. And we may have mentioned them before, but it's just a lot of them have been delayed. As you'll notice, especially if you're like an avid collectors like we are, with like Criterion and a few Arrow releases, the special features, they're beginning to depart from the usual format of sitting down with these actors. It's a bit of a mix. So we've kind of seen this evolution a little bit. Some of the Criterion releases that we have gotten, I think it may have started with, I can't remember what movie it was, but it's a Zoom call. And it's just two people talking on a Zoom call, which, you know, we're members of film critic groups and we engage in Zoom calls all day. We're doing one right now. So it's visual layout wise, it can get pretty boring, but it's beginning to evolve a little bit when people are becoming a little more comfortable to send a camera out there or one camera person and they'll film it. But some of the ones that I wanted to bring up from Scream Factory, My Bloody Valentine is doing a steelbook edition, and I will be getting that one because I really like the steelbook style that they have. I don't have every single one of them, but I have quite a bit that I'm proud of. And this one is a very special movie to me, and I would love to own this one. So that one's coming out February 9th, just in time for Valentine's Day.
And they've released that already in like the slip cover.
Yeah, we watched. Yeah, I think it was last year or the year before. I can't remember.
Right,
it was a long year, but we did review it, and we had a good time with that one. They had some good stuff on there. So I don't know if there's anything like new on there. They may have just taken another pass on the rendering. I'm not sure. They do have an action figure with it too, if you wanted to get that special edition. What else do we have here? Event Horizon is finally coming out on March 23rd. We've talked about that before on the podcast. So if under normal circumstances, we would already own it. But I think they had some complications there trying to fill out the special features that they needed and what they
one
needed.
Of them being the deleted scene of the like the hardcore torture death porn that happens. Like, I know they filmed a lot of that, and there's been like talk about like how it was lost and like it was damaged, but it seems like they got it and it's going to be included. So I'm very excited because I love this movie.
Yeah. So yeah, we're definitely going to be take a drink because we're going to do that one down the road pretty soon. And then the last one I wanted to mention from Scream Factory and Shout Factory is one of my favorite all-time favorite horror movies. Raw is getting its own release from Shout Factory. And I have a really nice edition already. I think it came from overseas, but it is available to, it's region free, so you can play it anywhere, and it has really good extras on it. So I'm pretty happy with it, and it has a slip cover and a really nice cover. I don't think this one has one, but it is being released in the States on Blu-ray, which is nice. And so I'm glad that more people will be able to see it. So I'm just probably, because this is one that I would go the extra mile for and probably own multiple copies of. So I will get this one, even if it's just a basic, your basic standard release.
Right. So I saw Raw at Fantastic Fest, but did we sit together during this movie?
I know me and Cole did, but I want to say that you were there as well.
I mean, I definitely saw it at Fantastic Fest, but I don't know if we were sitting next to each other. Because I remember eating the beef tartare and everything like that. So maybe we did, but I remember this becoming one of your favorites. And I think it was like your number one for a while.
Yeah. So I guess it sat for a whole year. Yeah, it was my number one for 2016, I believe. And then moving on to Arrow real quickly, the one release that I do want to mention, and I got quite a few of them this back half of 2020, that and I'm just looking at them over here, but the big one is Tremors for the 30th anniversary.
You're one of the lucky ones that got Tremors on Arrow. Like, not everybody got that.
Yeah, it's so pretty. Like, I just, as soon as I got it, because that's one of my wife's favorite horror movies, and I just had such a great time. And it's one of the best shot documentaries, I have to say, too. I think they may have done it before the pandemic, or maybe they did it during it, but they found some really interesting way to shoot it. Like, it feels like a bit of a true behind the scenes where you see the camera equipment. It kind of like really brings you into the process, and it's just shot really well. Cause you can kind of tell after a while when you watch some of them, like they just use clips from the movie, and this one, they really went the extra mile and tried to make it pretty fun for those who own all these discs or continue to collect. Trying to see if there was anything else that I wanted to mention, but that was the real big one. What else? The Last Starfighter. I watched that. It looked pretty good. That one was a fun one. That one was done by Nick Castle.
Right.
And then I got quite a few that I still need to watch. So, Flash Gordon was a good release last year.
Yeah, Flash Gordon Arrow was amazing.
Yeah.
That was a good one. A couple of the ones that I got recently, I guess, Versus finally came to Arrow.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Versus, so back in college in Kansas, I considered myself like a finder of like really weird shit cinema. And I got really into Japanese films of all genres. And one of them was Versus back in 2000, 2001, which mixes kind of like zombies, vampires, and samurais. And I was a big fan of it. And, you know, I had, I think, like a region-free bootleg two-disc DVD set of it. And now, all these years later, some 21 years later, Arrow has released it, which is really cool. It's a tough movie to get through for some people, I think, because the flow and the pacing is really weird, but I still like it. I'm glad it's there. Also, another one, Zavi, if you don't know what Zavi is, Z-A-A-V-I, I think that's how you spell it, or Z-A-V-V-I. They're this huge company in the UK that release crazy sets of movies, and they do toys, action figures, records, all sorts of stuff, but they released the 4K original 1976 Dawn of the Dead. It is good. It comes with like every edition. It comes with soundtrack. It comes with the scripts and booklets and all sorts of stuff. So I got that. I pre-ordered that, and that was pretty amazing to get and watch in 4K, because there really isn't a 4K version of that yet that's come out in the States that I believe. The one I had previous was a Blu-ray, like just a standard Blu-ray edition of it that came out many years ago. So that's a pretty cool set. I don't know if you can get that anymore, but I know they have revamped it into a smaller set if you still want it in 4K. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even mention, unless we talked about it in episodes past, the Friday the 13th set, since we actually got that.
Right. So the Friday, I don't think we have, since it's been since August, since we've talked about it, but yeah. So Scream Factory somehow got the rights to the Friday the 13th franchise, and they released a crazy big ass collector set that came in like this gigantic long box. I believe if you search YouTube for me or anywhere, I did an unboxing of it, but I was one of the few that had the 10 Blu-ray set of Friday the 13th. And then from 2008 on until now, you couldn't get the whole Friday the 13th set because they were different studios at some point and they weren't really out of print. So now this new one has new artwork. It has crazy amounts of bonus features. It came with posters and, oh my God, Preston, do you remember when you got this in the mail?
Oh yeah. It was just immediately brought a smile to your face because it said Friday the 13th on the box and you just knew exactly what it was. And it was so big because it had the posters in there, and you open it up and it's just so delicately put in there. So another piece of you is just like, ah, they care so much about people like me who do not want to receive something damaged.
Right. No, like it was like the box itself, like inside had Friday the 13th stuff in it, like printed on the box. Everything had like its little holder. Like it was almost like you went to like a ring shopping place to get like rings or jewelry. And there was they're like placed in there. That's kind of how this
like
was.
It feels like a sin if you were to throw away the box because the design goes across.
Right. No, it was really cool. So the posters were really cool. The Friday 13th set was amazing going through all of those again. It's pretty badass. So now that Scream Factory's done, two of the big ones, Halloween, Friday 13th. Do you think this year or next year we'll get an announcement saying, you know, one, two, Freddy's coming for you in a big set? Because there hasn't been a big set of Nightmare yet. Like we have that, they had that DVD set, which was really cool back in like the late 90s, but, or early to like 2000 or 1999. But, and then we had like the really small, like, you know, Blu-ray size set of Nightmare on Elm Street. That, you know, just had like, you know, little flippers for disc holders, not a big collector set. So I'm really curious if Scream Factory's going to announce that this year or next and saying like to complete the trilogy of, you know, movie monsters, Freddy's coming now, which would be awesome.
I bet you they're trying to make it happen. I would, because that Nightmare on Elm Street is my favorite horror franchise. I just find so much joy in it, and that actually was probably my introduction to horror in a lot of ways outside of Jaws. So I would be so happy if they were to do that and try to find a way, because I've looked it up and there's some really cool ones overseas where they use the original artwork. And so and Scream Factory does such a good job of like doing new stuff while also celebrating what came before. So I'll have like a reversible cover art. So I really hope they make it happen.
Like there's no reason why it shouldn't happen. Like it seems like that's the way they're going. Like I don't see it not happening.
Studio, just go to New Line.
I hope this is the case for that. But yeah. That's some Blu-rays, some stuff that we've been liking since, you know, the pandemic and whatnot. A lot of the studios haven't been sending as much, or a lot of stuff hasn't been coming out like before, but I think it's starting to ramp up again, which is cool. But then Mondo is still doing really well with records and soundtracks, right?
Yeah, they still have quite a few maybe not as many horror releases that are fit for this podcast, but a lot of them that I'm really excited about. I guess horror wise, most recently this week they announced Saint Maud is getting its own really pretty design that you can find online. I think it's for sale right now. I'm not sure of the status of if it's sold out or not, but they were selling the original artwork too. And if you see the movie, I think you should. Just go ahead and get it. It's pretty great. What else? News of the World, the Tom Hanks movie, is getting its vinyl release. I believe those are shipping out right about now. I don't know if they're still available. It's hard to tell. So you have to go on mondoshop.com to see just kind of what's available. And as we've been saying in past episodes, when we review their products, like you gotta be quick to hit the click button. Because you never know like what they have coming down the pipeline, and you might find out like a day before. So make sure you always have money in your bank that you're willing to throw down for Mondo.
Correct. They did a great edition of The Mandalorian Season 1. Yeah. That was, to have for a TV series, Season 1, to do an actual record for each episode with different artwork and different liner notes and all that was really cool. And it just shows how cool that was. And it looked great, sounded great. So if you can find that and you're a fan of the Mandalorian, definitely try to find that as quick as you can.
Yeah, you might have to pay out the ass because it's I want to say it's like $500 or something if you were trying to buy it on eBay.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. It might even be higher. I'm not even sure. Let's see. Mandalorian.
Should I sell mine? No, I'm definitely keeping it. Of course.
Yeah, it's kind of around the some of them are selling for about $400 to $500, but there's a few of them that are starting from bidding. Like there's one on here that's currently $2 for 2 days left. So go find that one.
Hey, go find that one. Bid $2. Maybe it's just a picture of the actual record set that you'll get for $2.
Probably so. No discs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but it's, man, that's such an immaculate set. I spoke to Moshe Feek, who is the art director who is behind some of the layout and the look of it. Over at the Denton Record Chronicle, you can look that up. But yeah, he talked extensively about the process, and we've had him on the show before to discuss the process. But it was more interesting to kind of get into like what they do for something that's so big, like Star Wars and Disney. And then he told me like what the process was for working with people, creatives like Tom Cruise, because they did the Mission Impossible series on vinyl, and they were talking about like normally when they do design, it's pretty standard for people to, or ad agencies to, give people 2 weeks to look over what they come up with. But with Tom Cruise, it was a month, because he was either shooting, he's doing so many things, and then he had to take that time to kind of look over everything. But it's just like really interesting to see like all these people who get involved and what they may say.
Yeah, that's it was fun talking with them and seeing like just how much is involved in it all, right? So pretty cool. Any other bloody bits of news that you want to get to before we move on to our next segment?
I think that's it. I can't think of anything else horror wise because it's been pretty quiet, and I've mentioned movies that are coming up. Even episodes past, I think we talked about Red Dot, which is coming out on Netflix next month. I'm excited about that one. So I hope to talk about that come next month.
It'll be good. Well, let's move on to our bloody question. My bloody question. This is where we ask a fun question related to our main event, our main feature presentation, Joyride. And we bring the question to Reddit and we read some of the answers, but we also have our own answers. So the question this week for Joyride was, how would you prank a deranged truck driver who was after you in order to escape? So in the vein of this horror movie Joyride with Paul Walker, Lily Sobieski, and Steve Zahn, if you were being chased and terrorized by a crazed truck driver, what prank would you pull to ensure your escape and safety? Preston.
Oh boy. Okay. You gotta out psycho the psycho. So you gotta dress up as Buffalo Bill and then play it on the CB radio.
What would you say?
You kidnap me, I kidnap me hard.
You don't know what pain is.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
So like, you would just go crazier.
What?
You would just go crazier.
Yeah, I would, because I would do anything that I could to survive. And so I would just go just fully unleash in this character. And just because every nightmare that I've had, especially as somebody who has like very vivid nightmares where I feel like that's what I have to do to survive. It's kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street where like one of the characters will step up and be like, yeah, I got you, Freddy. Like they just want to be above them, but they ultimately lose. I try to be a little more careful about it. And just say the absolute most disgusting thing. Say like I have like all these bodies at my house. Like you just really got to go really far and deep with it.
That's pretty good. I'm so glad you went there. It's so wonderful. I love that you played Goodbye Horses too. I started dancing, man. That was good. So I guess what I would do, since in the vein of the movie, him wanting a girl.
Yeah.
So to speak, I would like, okay, I'm going to be at this hotel, you know, and like somehow try and get a fake like dummy of a girl and like rig it with booby traps and like, you know, metal jaws, you know, all over. So like, you know, it cuts off certain appendages and you can escape pretty easily. That would be my go-to, I guess. That's where my mind went. I like yours better. Just become, just, you know, cover yourself in feces. And just like, yeah. I'm ready for it. Oh my, that was good. But yeah, that's what I would do. I think I would go blow up doll route and, you know, rig it somehow.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I forgot what bloody question it was, but it was when we did one of the Friday the 13th movies, and we talked about like what would we do to stump Jason or psych him out in some way. And it was him walking in on a crazy sex scene, because it's always like standard missionary position that he finds these kids in.
Yes,
find, like the most disgusting, like two girls in a cup kind of thing.
Yes, Caligula style. Jason at Caligula.
So you got to bring that mentality over to this.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I like that. Shall we read some of the Reddit answers?
Yes. Did anybody say Optimus Prime?
Nobody said Optimus Prime, unfortunately. So Broken Wrench 7 said, call him into the cops as a drunk driver. And I thought that, I mean, that's pretty easy and pretty good way, maybe. If you know, knew
who he was, but that's the scary part of the movies. You never know where he's at.
Right. He just seems to show up. So I thought that was pretty good. And somebody else commented about like, this has got to be it, right? Although I feel like somehow always takes place where it always going to be one cop and then he easily gets killed by the trucker. So Richard's Statue said, prank, you pull the car to the left, then to the right, then to the left. The moment the front of the truck is not behind the car, hit the brakes. Hades Syrah 52 said, swerve all over, pull off to the side, then jump out and run around while screaming, bees, bees, they're everywhere. Your firearms are useless against them. Which just had a huge smile on my face because I recently rewatched that movie where that's from. Black Sheep, right?
Tommy Boy.
No, it was Black Sheep, I think.
No, with Tommy Boy, because they're on their way to Chicago.
Is not Black Sheep with the which one is the road? Because it's the same one as Roads, right? Or is it Tommy Boy?
No, it's Tommy Boy, because it's confusing because you can blend them together, not just because of the casting, but because of the cop car. But it's when the cops pull them over, and then he says, we'll come back and check on you. Holy shit.
So was it David Spade or was it Rob Lowe in there?
There's no, well, Rob Lowe's in that movie, but it's not, David Spade's in the car with him when he's doing that bit.
Okay, because I was sworn it was Black Sheep.
No, okay. Black Sheep's good, but Tommy Boy's better. But yeah, that scene's from Tommy Boy.
Bees! Great stuff. And then, oh my God. Mahavis Nunjay said, this is so easy. The MacGruber celery in the ass distraction. Oh my, thank you for that. Yeah. One. See, and I then
told you gotta get dirty.
Yes. And then my favorite Reddit handle, Chekhov's Nerf Gun. said he had a really long answer. He said, you slow down and you match the trucker speed. Open your glove box and pull out two red MAGA hats you keep hidden for times just like these. Apply the hats to both your heads and your passenger's head. Look out the window and wave, gesturing to the hat in a subtle yet tasteful manner that lets them know you are a patriot. The crazed trucker, having recognized his own kind, should immediately realize his mistake and wave back. There's a 50% chance he may join you at Cracker Barrel for some country fried steak and hot cocoa. Once you've all said your goodbyes and exchanged information so that you can send each other the holiday cards, hide the MAGA hats in the glove box and never speak of them again. That is until the next time the next lunatic tries to kill you. And that one wins. That went a long way. There's so much to unpack here.
Yeah, it's. I wonder if that particular person watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, because there's an episode where they do that.
Yeah, where Larry David doesn't want to have people around him, so he brings a MAGA hat with him. And if somebody's going to sit right next to him at a restaurant, he puts on the MAGA hat and everybody just goes away from him, which is a brilliant piece of comedy. But Chekhov's Nerf gun, holy shit. That was an amazing, very thought through answer. He took time.
He thought of the whole trilogy there.
He did. He did. So thank you very much. Everybody at Reddit. That was a great, my bloody question and answers. Thank you. Let's move on to bloody tunes in relation to Joyride. This is where we pick a song and we somehow relate it to the movie we're featuring, Joyride, of course. So Preston, bloody tune, please.
Just because it's a 2000s movie and it has 2000s like music in there. I mean, it was done by J.J. Abrams and it has like that early 2000s horror movie kind of feel. So they just throw in songs, whether it relates to it, the movie or the content at all or not. But I think I'd put One Headlight in there by the Wallflowers.
Amazing. Amazing. I like it. Are you there?
Yeah.
All right. One Headlight by the Wallflowers.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. That's good. Did you, when you were thinking about this, did you just like listen to a couple and you were like, or did you immediately think of this one?
I immediately thought of this song just because I have a 90s and 2000s mix that I created and it comes up on there. Not just because King of Staten Island used it as part of its story in some way. I just like that song.
Yeah.
So, and it fit, the description fit. I was just trying to think of like songs that had road rage, on the road again. But then I think about one of the most scariest components of Joyride, and that's the light that he uses.
Right. No, for sure. Good song. Good choice, man. Good bloody tune. Can you guess which mine was? Well, I guess you might probably know since we're on the run sheet.
I did see it, so go ahead.
Mine I picked, I immediately thought of Truckin' from the Grateful Dead, which was first appeared on their American Beauty album in 1970. And actually, this song is recognized by the United States Library of Congress as a national treasure song. And of course, it was written by Jerry Garcia, Bob Weir, Phil Lesh, and Robert Hunter. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a little, you know, like little catchy jam song, which is good. And it's like they're very folky, like Grateful Dead is. However, I think if they used, I like this song. I'm going to recommend this song because it's so good. However, I think if they would have used this in the song, kind of like a Jordan Peele Us with I Got Five on it, kind of slowed it down and added like a creepiness to it, because there's like a little creepiness effect to it, because there's a scene in the movie where they're in a cornfield and the villain, the trucker, plays like a kind of like a romantic classical song. But I like this song, and I just, you know, pictured like trucking. The other one I thought of was On the Road Again. Yeah. But I didn't go that way. But yeah, Trucking by Grateful Dead. Loved it. Check those out. We'll be posting the videos and whatnot on the post. But now on to bloody recommendations. This is our segment where we recommend a movie, new or vintage, maybe related to the movie we're talking about later, maybe not, but we just want to recommend a movie to you. Preston, you're up, buddy.
I hope we didn't do the same one.
I wrote mine in the run sheet. So I wrote two of them. So okay. Are they the same?
Let me check real quick and make sure. Because I have. No, we're good.
Okay, good.
So I went a little more obvious with mine just because it had this particular film makes a great companion piece with a similar feel. I guess the villains are a little comparable in that they're always trying to be one step ahead of the victims in both stories. However, one's a little more cozier than the other, and you get to see them more. Versus a voice, and that is 1986's The Hitcher with Roger Hauer, Thomas C. Howell, and Jennifer Jason Leigh. My particular introduction to this film happened when the night that I saw Jaws for the first time. I watched it with my parents. I was probably 5 or so, I want to say. And we were in Galveston. We watched Jaws for the first time and then went out to the beach and was terrified. But I remember just being so scared by Jaws that I stayed up while my parents fell asleep. And so we were just watching a particular channel that had horror movies on it, and The Hitcher came on. And I just remember also being quite terrified by Rutger Hauer and its ending scene where it has Jennifer Jason Leigh tied to the back of a semi truck where he can dismember her, like take her apart because she's tied to like the trailer of a semi, her hands and her feet are to the back of the semi truck. And he's just in there revving the engine trying to, because the whole movie is about, in some way, just kind of about masculinity, like being like trying to, Rutger Hauer's trying to toughen this kid up in a way. I mean, you could argue that, but it's just a really thrilling and fascinating movie, just like Joyride is. Although Joyride's probably more terrifying because you don't get to see the villain until the very end. But Rutger Hauer, like, you get to see him right away, and he's just, everything that he does in that film is just so mysterious, and that's what makes it terrifying. Because right away, Thomas C. Howell is trying to deliver this car to somebody else, and he's fallen asleep while he's driving, and he picks up a hitchhiker, which is Rutger Hauer's character, gets in the car, and already, like, you just feel uncomfortable, like he's crawling under your skin a bit. He's just such a good villain, and all throughout, like even when the cops think that Thomas C. Howell is the one that's responsible for all these events that happen that involve murder, Rutger Hauer doesn't want that to happen. Like, he'll kill those cops Terminator style, and then just wants to put Thomas C. Howell's character in his own game. Like, he has to be in control of it. And that's what makes him a really fascinating villain. And on top of him just kind of being this very, I don't know, just like this way that he carries himself, this way that he talks, like he just wants complete control. And the whole thing just is to prove, try to get Thomas C. Howell's character to prove that he's man enough to do what he needs to do.
The
Hitcher.
That's a good one, man. It's a great one. I went also pretty on the nose with this one as well. I actually had two that I thought of. One that I thought of was called Rubber, and it's not my main one, but it's, you know, about a rubber tire with telepathic powers that kills people and hunts people, and it's fucking batshit and great and all sorts of weird. But the one I went with was Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, part of the Grindhouse double feature with his brother Robert Rodriguez. Death Proof with Kurt Russell in a car stalking, killing people for no random reason, really. And it's just such a fun movie. I mean, a lot of people think that this is Tarantino's worst film, but in a sea of like amazingness, which one is really worse, what is good, what is bad. So I really like this movie because it's got like a lot of character development, a lot of fun, and it's like silly, but also really terrifying and on the edge of your seat, heart racing with some of the stunts they do with the cars and car crashes. I really liked it. And I liked that, you know, they were very self-aware. I mean, even Kurt Russell looks at the camera a couple times and like smiles, and it's just such a fun and funny movie. And like, you know, half of the movie is a set of girls, and then this crazy thing happens, and then it just like totally takes off to another set of girls like midway through, and then that's who we keep with for a while, and it's amazing, and it's so much fun. It's like
new turn.
Yes. So bad guys in cars stalking people, killing them is pretty great. I mean, it would be a cool triple feature with these three films we just talked about. But yeah, that would be my
duel in there, and then we'd have four.
Yeah, we'd have a dead duel. And then Christine, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there you go. The Hitcher and Death Proof, which brings us to our main event of the 92nd podcast. We are talking about Joyride, the movie, back in 2001. So we've got to talk about this movie, and it's so much fun to watch it because it's been a long time since I've watched it, but I watched it in the theater opening weekend back in 2001. So this movie was directed by John Dahl, who kind of went on to do some really great TV stuff like True Blood, Dexter, Battlestar Galactica, Breaking Bad, just a ton of stuff. So he directed this, and of course it was produced and written by J.J. Abrams. Yes, that J.J. Abrams and Clay Tarver. And it stars Steve Zahn, Paul Walker, and Lily Sobieski, amongst other people. And the music was done by the impressive and award-winning Marco Beltrami, who's known for 310 to Yuma, The Hurt Locker, A Quiet Place, and a ton of other things. But he also did this. He also did Scream, Halloween H2O. So he's been in that realm. So interestingly enough about this movie, the movie, of course, stars Paul Walker. This movie came out on October 5th, 2001. Now, for those Paul Walker fans, just a few months prior to Joyride, a little tiny indie film called The Fast and the Furious, starring Paul Walker, came out in the summertime. What is that movie about? Paul Walker driving cars and committing crimes. What is Joyride about? Paul Walker driving a car and there's crimes being committed. Boom goes the dynamite. Exactly. So it was kind of fun to watch Paul Walker do the same thing basically in a movie. Let's like just start. This movie came out in 2001. I loved it. Preston, in a couple sentences, does it still hold up from when you first saw it to now?
I mean, there's some things that characters do that are pretty stupid that my 30-year-old mind would say hell no to, but it's so thrilling for what it is. And hell yeah, it's still scary and great. So yeah, I think it's completely worth watching today.
Right. I echo that completely. I absolutely saw it in the theater, you know, in Kansas when it came out, and it was a huge reaction from the crowd. We'll get into some of the key scenes, but it still holds up. It's still like a scary, hard R movie. And it also has got funny bits to it, but yeah, it's still shocking and pretty great. Like it definitely holds up. And you can see, because this is kind of early Paul Walker, but you could see why people were so drawn to him, even if he wasn't like, you know, winning Oscars, but there was like a magnetism to him. And then with the help of Steve Zahn, was really good. And I guess we'll get into Lily Sobieski in a little bit, but Does this movie, does Joyride fall in line with these early 2000s horror action movies, or does it kind of feel like timeless, like it can take place anytime, you know, minus kind of some of the technology in the film? But do you think this just like oozes like early 2000s, late 90s horror action, something in the terms of like maybe like the 13 Ghosts remake or something like that, where it just like it was like crazy, you know, alternative rock music and flat quick cuts or something like that? Or does it feel timeless to you?
I mean, it's victim of that a little bit, as I tease with the my music choice of the week, that there's just transitional scenes, like it needs a little something to kind of have a soundtrack so they can make a little bit more money and probably get some extra money for using those songs. But I think it's far better. I think it's better than a lot of early 2000s horror movies. And because we've talked when we did 13 Ghosts, like it's a lot of heavy editing, like Bones too with Snoop Dogg. Like it's just like there's a particular style, like where style was just the main focus. It was like just when like CGI was coming out and people were, or not really coming out, but that's when it exploded and people were just experimenting with color and editing effects. And then a lot of those horror movies just showed you things that you just don't really want to see in a horror movie. And we like it when it slows down, provides some character development. And I think this movie does provide that. It kind of starts out, you know, oddly enough, on the other podcast that we do on this Multimedia Men channel, we did I'll Be Home for Christmas. I think this movie kind of goes along with it a little bit. Just trying to get home.
Yeah.
His girl.
Yeah, we're just trying to
got some tickets, but he's got to, you know, take the road there.
Right.
Yeah, I think parts of it do have like this timeless story, but it's really hard to ignore the fact that they didn't have cell phones. They have to pull over to the side of the road to talk on the payphone, and all they have is the CB radio for communication to see if there's cops ahead. Now we got apps that can tell you that. So I think they couldn't really make it as thrilling today if they were to make it. Like it just something about that particular time in that transition of technology where it just makes it terrifying that you just didn't have anywhere to go. You had to run into a convenience store if you needed help. You had to do
right. All those things.
It's like partly both, that it just needs to exist in this particular time where technology isn't as crazy as it is today, where we have so much access to things.
Right. I think there's an element to that. I do think that it could take place today because I think even with the technology we have today, driving cross country, you can get no cell signal. You can lose your battery. You could have forgotten your charger. Or
kind of annoyed if that happened.
Like, right. You know, like, so it would be like just like another like element to like,
the all the alien movies today.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, hey, what was that? It lost you.
Yeah. No, it would be like that.
This is 2050 and you lose your signal. What the fuck?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, so I think the overall feel of it feels timeless because it doesn't feel like it feel like it could have came out in the 80s or now, in a way that how it was shot, the actual, you know, people really cared about this movie making it, you know, practical effects. There was a lot of art that went into this, like, I think, and it's not just to gore and torture or anything. There's a lot more to it, I think. And I think that's what makes it stand a little better. So if you don't remember what Joyride is about, the movie follows Lewis, played by Paul Walker, who is at Berkeley, and his childhood friend who has a really big crush on named Venna, played by Lily Sobieski, is at Colorado, and they've been talking and they're about to go home for the summer, and he's like, hey, let's go back to New York or whatever, and I'll pick you up. And she's like, you got a car? He's like, I got this plane ticket, but like, yes, I have a car. You have a car? Yes. And so the next scene is him getting a really shitty old car. So he gets a 1971 car. Yeah, he gets it's an old car, and then he finds out that his older brother named Fuller, played by Steve Zahn, is kind of always in trouble with the law, and he's just getting out. He was arrested, so he has to go bail him out and pick him up and bring him back home. And so he does, and when they're at a gas station together, brothers being brothers, Fuller has a CB radio. Huh? What'd you say?
Brothers give hugs.
Brothers give hugs, man. He installs a CB radio for a very small amount of money in his car so they can have fun. They can talk to other truckers and find out speed traps and stuff for the cops. And Fuller gets this idea of playing pranks and telling Paul Walker to be a female, a girl on the CB, and say her name's Candy Cane to mess with other truckers. And so this guy named Rusty Nail, voiced by the voiced by Ted Levine, who was Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, wants to meet Candy Cane. And while the two brothers end up at a motel, they run into like this racist bigot asshole in the lobby, and they prank this racist asshole bigot with the trucker Rusty Nail in order to come and see Candy Cane. So what happens is Rusty Nail comes to see this guy. It's not a girl. And they hear like this weird stuff happening. It turns out the next day, this guy's jaw has been ripped clear off. And now this trucker is deranged and out to kill them. They end up picking up, Vena, Lily Sobieski, but this trucker is still out to get them. And it ends, you know, in a cat and mouse chase, violent, kind of kill streak. So that's kind of the gist of the movie. There's many more scenes of what's happened, because kind of throughout the movie, you think that the killer is not there. The killer has like said, oh, it's a joke. That's fine. You know, I messed with you, you messed with me. But then stuff starts happening and he's just out to kill people. And it ends in kind of like a very, very big climactic way. So with this movie going through, I mean, I imagine the first time you watched it, you're just like, okay, where does the movie go from here? But then because he does like attack these two brothers before they pick up Lily Sobieski. And then you feel like it's, oh, it's over. They go pick her up. You know, they meet the college friend. They're having a good time. And then all of a sudden it starts over again. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that it was paced well? What are some of the, like the great scenes? Like, talk to me about your thoughts about the movie.
Okay. I do think it's paced well. It gives you enough to understand these brothers and what's like motivating them, like where they want to go and how they are. And like, you can kind of just see like what their friendship or relationship has been all these years. Like, it has that big brother, little brother kind of thing about it. And so I enjoyed that about it, that it takes its time a little bit with that. But then when it starts to pick up speed, when they do this prank, and that's the part of it where I'm like, oh, I just wouldn't do that. But I've also seen enough movies and have stewed on this movie long enough to be smart enough not to do that. So that's not exactly fair. But if I was 13 years old, I probably would do something stupid like that, because I have done prank calls then.
Right. But never something as crazy as this.
As elaborate as that.
Right. And mean as that. Like, you make prank calls like, is your refrigerator running? You know, like, oh, okay. Something like that. But never like to take two people and make them that. And I think with the two brothers, there was a lot of love and chemistry there. And Paul Walker, you know, is the straight, narrow, you know, good guy. And I think Steve Zahn's a good guy, but he's just too crazy for his own good and wants to have fun and thinks it's all funny. Yeah. Because there's a moment in the movie where like, just apologize. You know, like, I'll apologize. And Steve Zahn doesn't want to do that. Yeah. So, and then he just like takes it to another level. So I think there's like those mistakes.
Kind of like the Hitcher, like, just don't want to be vulnerable and don't want to accept that they've fucked up unless their life is really in jeopardy, when they have, as your background indicates, a semi truck that's pushing their car up against a tree and they're about to die. That's when they apologize. So yeah, the first one, I think when they start just teasing and doing the girl voice, I think it's okay. But yeah, it's when they bump heads with that racist guy in the hotel lobby at the Lone Star Motel, and especially being dumb enough to say what they say, which is inviting this guy to bring pink champagne in, and to get who he thinks is with Candy Cane, but it's this guy that they bumped into. And that's where they took it way too far. And obviously that's the rest of the movie and what makes it a thrilling movie. So if they were smart, we wouldn't get all that. But on top of that, it does frustrate me a bit that they parked their car with their CB.
Yeah. Antenna
right in front of it and just think, yeah, it'll be okay.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, they're not thinking. So what's funny about this, cause they're these two brother, I mean, they're idiots. So I love the fact that you don't hear really much because they're listening to what's happening when Rusty Nail comes to the racist bigot guy, and you don't hear much. You just hear kind of a small thud and like maybe like a little choke thing. Yeah. And then the next day, all the cops are out and they're like, you know what happened? Did you know what happened? They're not really telling much about what they know, the two brothers, Paul Walker and Steve Zahn. Yeah. And they go to the hospital and the dude's jaw is ripped clean off. And it's like horrifying. And in actually a comedic, really cut like edit, they're both sitting like, you know, dogs with tails between their legs in front of a sheriff who's yelling at them, "You assholes, because you wanted to have some fun. Somebody is this way and you,
and we're going to let you go."
But like, it's great because you don't see the scene of them telling everything that happened, but you know, like immediately, okay, guys, we played a prank. This is what happened. This is what happened. And I'm glad that's implied. It's like really smart because Zahn and Walker don't say anything in this scene in front of the sheriff. It's just the sheriff standing up to them, yelling at them, "What did you get out of jail yesterday?" Yeah. And it's such a funny sequence of events that they know they did wrong.
Yeah.
And they feel terrible about it. So after that, I think that sequence where you see so many of these movies try, where an 18-wheeler is going full force, full speed down at somebody, but that scene where you talked about where the 18-wheeler shows up really slow and barely touches their car against a tree and just slowly starts to crush them is even more terrifying than a high speed chase, right?
Yeah. So this is what happened last night when my wife and I watched it. She grew up watching it just as much as I did, except I saw it in the theaters when it came out. And I think she saw it a couple of years later when it was on VHS. But we both have a relationship with this movie. And enjoy it because it's scary, because it's, as she said, a rational like situation. Like it's a rational, scary movie, where for me, I'm terrified of Jaws, but she'll say, just don't go in the water. Semi truck everywhere out there when you go on the road. So this is a situation that could really happen. And that's what makes it scary, and that it slows it down when it needs to, that, because this movie is very good about building dread and just maintaining dread throughout. And that particular scene, because they're freaked out. This is following that moment when they know that they've messed up and they're out on the car. And Paul Walker is just like, just wondering if you see any cops ahead, any bears from your rocking chair. And he's just got the wind knocked out of him because of the guilt. And then that's when the voice comes back on, and you know that truck has to be within a certain mile radius, probably 5 miles or so, has to be close by. And then when they do the whole game of, you really need to get that fixed, what, your tail light, and that's when they know that they've been exposed. And then you're like, oh God, they are screwed. And so they pull off of the road. They go to this gas station because they ran out of gas because, you know, that's what's got to happen in these movies, you know? So they pull off of the road. They're scared by this other truck driver who has a tire thumper to check the pressure. And so that particular scene is played out very well, where you're creeped out. You're thinking that it's like a Doobie Brothers type of dude that's behind all this. And he's Paul Walker goes inside to make a phone call, and then is so freaked out by this guy being in there because he's walking around with the bat. He has to pay for the gas still, but he leaves his credit card, and then that truck's it goes after them. And then that's when it brings about the big truck that actually comes in, and it has that terrifying spotlight and chases them down, plows through that the ICE truck driver that was trying to deliver their credit card. And that scene is just played so well because they're just going out in the middle of nowhere. And that's terrifying to be out in the middle of nowhere. That's no matter what movie it is. But the fact that he has like these really bright lights and it's just slow and huge and just crushing them against this car, like they have nowhere to go. It just kind of escalates from there, where again, like this villain is just, you never know where he is. You never know what semi truck he's in. You don't know when he's watching them, when they're out and spend the night in a hotel. Guess he's watching his girlfriend. Like, he just knows like everything, knows to kidnap the girlfriend's roommate. So it just keeps you on your toes and all throughout. I just love the way that it plays out. Like, it's almost has like this kind of poetic touch to it. But it also ends in such a way where it's like the classic horror franchise that they're trying to grow, where it's like, oh, he's still out there. I don't know if you've ever seen the alternate ending, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah. So speaking of alternate endings, I guess they filmed like 3 or 4 different alternate endings for this movie.
Yeah.
And then other deleted scenes, like I guess there were sex scenes with Lily and Paul and Lily and Steve, because yeah, there is kind of
love triangle.
Yeah, but they X that out of the theatrical cut for sure. So yeah, so this all kind of culminates in kind of like a last drag effort where the trucker kidnaps Lily and puts her in a motel room and tells the brothers like, come here, you know, and get her or something like that. But he has rigged her up in a chair with tape, with a shotgun to her face, that when anybody opens the door to the hotel room, the gunshot will go off. And
how Saw of him.
How very Saw of him, very early Saw. And then meanwhile, Steve Zahn's trying to help out, but then gets like this giant metal pole through his leg that somehow the truck driver like bends so he can't get out of it. It's all kind of crazy. So it ends with he's still alive, even though we don't know. And I love how it ends with everybody kind of looking almost at the camera like, what?
Yeah. You're never safe. Like they had a moment of rest where they could think that this is over, but it's not. I will say the one moment where I don't like it is when they show, because Ted Levine was not cast until like post-production. Like,
yeah, he's only the voice. It was like a really big, stocky actor who's been in a bunch of stuff actually playing the physical guy who you rarely ever see. But it was Ted Levine's voice.
So I think they should have made greater efforts for you not to see him.
Yeah.
You start to see him when he's like looking through the blinds, and that just kind of takes away from I would much rather them find a way to just keep him in the dark the entire time and not have that scene where Steve Zahn comes through the window and Paul Walker's about to open the door that would possibly shoot his the girl that he likes. And
yeah.
And then he says, and it's clearly not Ted Levine's voice. And he says,
correct. Yeah. This,
it's going to be hilarious. And you get to see more of them then. And so that it does rob a little bit of the impact of the film, but it's still, but you kind of tell as they shot 4 different endings, they're still like playing with the mechanics of that whole particular setting of them being at that hotel, which is just trying to bring it back full circle to where this whole game started. But I love that, because it hints at when the cops are shooting at the semi truck as he's about, as Steve Zahn's character is about to get run over. They open the door and you see the watch. You know it's the watch from that ice truck driver.
Right.
So it's well played on his, on Rusty Nail's part to do that. But yeah, still hated that they showed that a different actor.
Right, right. Yeah, it was really weird because Ted Levine looks crazy too. But so that happened. But we have to talk about, let's talk about Steve Zahn.
Yeah.
In this movie. So unarguably, Steve Zahn's the best part of this movie, or at least the best actor, and the best, his most fun, because so I remember a lot of this movie, but there was some stuff I don't remember about this movie until I watched it again. So his delivery in several moments. So one, when he's trying to convince his brother, Paul Walker, to do this prank, like to actually get Rusty Nail to the hotel, he gets so excited about it. He's like, fuck it, come on. This is the best thing of our life. And it's just so funny to watch that moment because he's so into it. And you could tell that he's been talking his brother into everything for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he's real excited just to do this with his brother. He's like, he's a racist bigot. He deserves it. And he's real excited. And the other moment that now, going back to when I saw it in the theater opening weekend, is one of the moments that I'll always remember that came back into my mind, where it was such a guttural, great audience reaction of a full packed house, was in the bar where Lily and Steve and Paul were in the bar. Lily goes to the bar to get drinks, and like some random bumpkin country locals come up and say, like, well, hello, Missy, you know, what's your name? And she just not want a part of it. And they're starting to surround her. Three of these bumpkins are starting to surround her, kind of like sexually harass her. Paul Walker comes out and is like, what's happening? And he's like, oh, is this your bitch? Tell your bitch to be quiet, you know, something like that. Steve Zahn sees this across the bar and immediately runs up in like a country bumpkin yelling voice. You dumb bitch. Why are you talking to other people? You got to go. And like to, you know, to quiet.
Bitch, are you mouthing off again?
Yeah. To ease the situation and get out of this situation. That moment is so wonderful in cinema, but damn it, Steve Zahn is so great in that role. And like, it's so tense, but it's like a breath of fresh air that he did this. And just, I remember the whole theater cracking up at this part because it's so outrageously funny. What do you think about, tell me about what you think of Steve Zahn in these sequences.
Oh, he's very much the best part of the movie, because he releases the tension, but he can also like lean into it a bit. Like for instance, also in that scene when they're in the car and the semi truck's being pushed up against them, like Paul Walker's very calm about it, surprisingly, but then Steve Zahn's like, he's like right there next to the truck, so he has every reason to be more terrified. And because, I mean, he was the person who kind of instigated this whole thing, and so he's like, oh my god, we apologize. Like, it's just like his energy level is just like another level, and it's so perfect for this movie. So it makes, like, he knows how to fully commit when it's funny and when it needs to be terrifying and when you need to be scared. Because even when Paul Walker's trying to get in the room, like, there's just like a certain like yell that he does that makes it perfect. Like, he's like the perfect choice for this particular role. So, and he also seems like somebody who would have a history, like in this particular character, have a history with the law.
It is, so yeah, he's
good at playing those characters who are like wisecrackers, who may have had a history with the law.
Right, right. He's so much fun to watch in this. And so, Paul Walker's Paul Walker. You could see his screen presence so early on. And then Lily Sobieski. So Lily Sobieski. So to tell everybody, full disclosure, we kind of reached out to some of the people in the movie. We heard back from Steve Zahn's people, but he was very busy. But hopefully we'll have him on again for this, because we'd really like to. Lily Sobieski retired from acting years ago, and she's like a really great artist now. You can find her on Instagram and stuff like that. But this was like kind of like the very beginning of Lily's career. You know, like before this, she had like a almost never a non-speaking part. The what?
She was in Never Been Kissed.
That's yeah, right. Never Been Kissed. And Eyes Wide Shut for a small little scene. So this movie with her, you know, she's very dry, but she's also pretty smart and really great in this movie. However, like, she like doesn't wear a bra through this whole movie. And I wonder if this is like kind of like the 90s, early 2000s, where it might have been okay to, you know, for directors to do this to some of the actresses. What do you think? Like, because it's very clear in a lot of shots that they were really focusing on her and her body, right?
Yeah.
I would say, no reason, really.
Yeah, I'd probably say it was a filmmaker choice to put more butts in the seat at the time. But yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, because it's very... And you see it clear as day, like they're not trying to hide it. So I'm very curious on that kind of set of scenes, if like this was her idea, if this was not her idea. Because I mean, I get
her idea.
But yeah, I think that's kind of one of the dated things in the movie, because I think in the late 90s and early 2000s, we saw a lot of actresses who.
Friends. Happening on Friends all the time.
Yeah, where, you know, everybody would be wearing shirts, but then nothing underneath and you could clearly see everything. So it's very interesting. I thought about that, but I think Lily does really well in this movie, and I like Lily movies. I think she has kind of a very calming, very realistic nature to her, very natural. And I think her poor character is just kind of thrown into this, because a lot of stuff happens before she's picked up and she doesn't know about it until Rusty Nail strikes again.
Yeah, I wonder if this movie were to carry on, not only would we get some insight into the trauma that they're facing from this situation, and how haunted they're going to be for the rest of their lives because Rusty Nail is still alive, but also just like, what would that do to their relationship? I don't think they would stay together, like either of them.
Right. That's a question. Because
they brought that mess upon her.
Yes, that's the question, because Paul Walker and Lily aren't really dating at the time. They're not boyfriend, girlfriend. They know each other from childhood. They like each other. They have crushes on each other. However, with all this happening, she finds out, like, you pulled this prank. What is this happening? I've been kidnapped. I was about to die. Like, where does it go from there?
My roommate's been kidnapped. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole thing happened. So it's, how does this go on? I mean, because they made two sequels after this movie, but with none of the characters. But it would have been interesting to see kind of, because it kind of ends abruptly, almost like right after the climactic scene. You know, it's the stereotypical ending of a horror movie where police surround, you know, the crime scene, and these three characters are in the ambulance, and all of a sudden you hear the voice of Rusty Nail, Ted Levine, saying "Candy Cane," and then just everybody kind of looks up at the camera and it's done. It's the end. So you almost kind of want to see like this, what happened to them? Like, did they go home? Are they still being tracked or whatnot? I mean, that's definitely that they allude to, that they're still going to be, you know, tracked after, but oh my, it's a great question, Preston, because, you know, you don't get the closure of them actually becoming a couple, getting home or anything like that. So I wonder how that would be. And yeah, that's right. Like, how do you have that conversation after being put through such horrific circumstances?
That's why we need more films, that horror movies that do that. Like, maybe they even start in such a way where it's like, you know, we've seen enough horror movies to know like how they'll go, but what happens after that? I think Halloween 2018 tried to do that, experimenting with trauma and like what it can do to somebody, but it still had its own issues of kind of pulling in those, that same formula into it, rather than like, what is it really doing to these people? Like, that's a whole completely different genre where it's horror, but it's horror of the mind. And just like, did they get, I don't know what kind of lifestyle that they would have after that. Would they just completely give up because they gave everything that they have into this? Would they completely arm themselves to try to finally take him down? Just don't know. Or are they just going to go through the rest of their life looking over their shoulder? I don't know. They're interesting questions, and that's a sign of a good horror movie when it leaves you with those questions and those kinds of questions. You don't want to have plot hole questions.
Yeah, for sure. But is there any?
Overall, it's very solid.
Yeah, for sure it is. I agree. Do you think there's any like political or social commentary that John Dahl was trying, or J.J. Abrams was trying to get through here, if any? Or just wanted to make a fun horror movie?
I think he probably at that time just wanted to make a fun horror movie and just probably more speak about, there's a time to be stupid, but then there's a point where you can take it too far. So you need to think about more about like how you're talking to people. And 'cause you just don't know. Like, I mean, we're told all the time with like defensive driving videos, like do not mess with other people. Don't like there's times where like somebody will just piss you off and you want to honk your horn, but you don't know what that person's capable of. You don't know where they come from, what kind of day they've had. So I guess it just has me more thinking about those things. But not so much about like, I don't think it's trying to speak anything more about the larger world.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's because we talked about these alternate endings. Did you read about one of the alternate endings that they did?
I've only watched one of them, and it was when they have a face off with Rusty Nail, and it's pretty like hand to hand. And then Paul Walker's character gets in the truck and then drives it into, Hitcher style, into Rusty Nail, but the cops are still trying to get in the door, so there's that whole thing unfolding, but it ends with him dead. And then it very last minute tries to bring in some drama about that the brothers reconnected, they're great now, and they get a phone, Paul Walker calls his dad, and then his dad wants to talk to Steve Zahn's character, Fowler, and so it ends more hopeful there, but it's just not horror wise it's not a great ending.
Right
there's that's the one that I'm familiar with.
The one you're familiar with, I guess. I don't know if it's the same one, but there's another one, because I mean, this movie's known for having so many alternate scenes and endings, but I guess there's one where they all make it back home, and Rusty Nail shows up at Venice house and kidnaps her while she's showering, and he injures Lewis, and so it all kind of ends up where they crash into a Radio Shack and they kill Rusty Nail, and the last part of the script is Rusty's fingers and jaws are being cut off by the coroner in a hospital or whatever, where Lewis, Fuller, and Venna are all injured, but watching them take apart Rusty. Is that the one you saw?
No, that is not the one I saw. It is not as violent as that.
Yeah. So this was a pretty violent one. And I guess in this one, the roommate Charlotte is dead too. So, because in the movie she had survived. So, a pretty interesting little thing.
I wonder like which one J.J. Abrams was most passionate about.
Well, I think I mean, if they did it with this ending I just read, there's no more to do, but maybe they were like, oh, he's still at it. We can make a sequel. You know, this plans out for future sequels, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, I have to say that I'm glad they went with the one that they did. It still feels like, I mainly, it's just seeing the killer that bothered me. But I think they would have fixed that. It would have been pretty perfect. To leave more for the imagination, unless they, I don't know, he was the author of all their pain and he's like not actually there. And he just convinced some other person, maybe his co-pilot in his truck to take care of this particular act in his scheme. And that's not really Rusty Nail, but that's thinking too far into it. I don't think that's the case. I think just the beats of it are well done.
Yeah, no, for sure. Did you know that Eric Stoltz and Eric Roberts auditioned for the role of Rusty Nail?
No, but I did see that Sylvester Stallone was considered.
Yes, he was. He sure was. Which is really funny. Yeah, so this movie spawned two sequels, which I have not seen, but they do not feature Walker, Zahn, or Lili. But I think this movie, Joyride, is still a testament to its time, and it has not been released in a really big, I think this would be a great era of a Scream Factory release, but it only has bare bones Blu-ray release from years ago, and I would like to see this get the redo over type of thing, because there's some good horror here, and it's J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I think they totally should, because I have it on VHS, but I bought it on Vudu so I could watch it in its sharpest image, because I think it's on 4K.
Right. Yeah. So that's what so it's an HDX, and that's how I did it, because I think on iTunes right now, it's $14.99 to buy. But if you go to Amazon or Vudu, you can buy it for $7.99. And yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. And it looks good. There's a lot of really calculated shots that they have in there. We didn't even talk about them having to do the first prank that they had to do, or when Rusty Nail's getting back at them, makes them go order cheeseburgers naked.
Right. Yeah. There's a scene where they have to walk in naked, and it's, you get to see Paul Walker and Steve Zahn. They look good.
But Steve Zahn, that'd be a thing to bring up when we hopefully talk to him, is in that scene, Paul Walker wears no shoes, but Steve Zahn wears boots. And I was like, that's smart.
Which means that he had to put his boots back on.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great. I bet you he did that just to be funny.
He's already in a vulnerable situation. He doesn't want to lose any more dignity, but yeah, keep your boots on.
No, there's a lot to this movie, and revisiting, I just feel like I loved it more, and I'm glad I own it now. And I was trying to remember when we picked this, I was like, did Scream Factory ever release this? And no, they never did. And I think it's a forgotten type of movie. I have to mention this, because it's so much fun to round this out. So there's a couple of people in this movie that you may or may not recognize, but there's one guy who has one line in the movie. And he's only credited as Man at the Door, and his real name in real life is Hugh Dane. Hugh Dane. So he's the one where towards the end of the film where Paul Walker and Steve Zahn are going from motel to motel trying to find the room 17 to find Lili.
Yeah.
One of the doors opened, and it's this black guy who just yelled what do you want? I told you, hold on. And they're like, oh, it's not her. And they leave. That guy is the security guard from The Office. Hugh Dane. But he's like, he's much younger in this, and he's like really built and big. And I'm like, I was like, I recognize this guy. Who is this? I had to look it up. I'm like, oh my God, it's the security guard from The Office with, you know, Michael Scott and all that stuff.
Yeah. And then Jay Hernandez is in it playing a Marine when he was like one of the last hotels that they stopped at before.
Yes.
There really quickly.
And Jay Hernandez would go on to star in movies like
Suicide Squad.
What?
Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad, but also horror movies like Quarantine and Hostel. Yeah. Jay Hernandez played a Marine, like two dudes in Marine suits, I guess. It's pretty funny. They just like you blink and you miss them. But yeah, those are, it's pretty cool to see that in there. But yeah, this movie is good. Recommend it. Go to your nearest Vudu or Amazon Prime and get it for $7.99. I think it's worth the buy for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Like, so last night when I was watching it with my wife, as I said, she was a big fan, but she couldn't watch the last 30 minutes of it. She had to walk out because she couldn't handle it. So what happened last night that was so funny, so I didn't end up finishing it until this morning, but we went to bed, and then we had a big discussion about that Jaws and Joyride and Rational Horror and that sort of thing, and it was really good. And then about an hour later, like, we hear like this screech sound, and she's like, what is that? And it's obviously a dog. But I was like, it sounded like, and she's like, stop it, thinking that it's a semi truck out there.
Oh, that's good, that's funny. Yep. And I'm glad she liked it. That's good.
The power of the movie. It's scary. The cornfield scene, it still holds up.
It sure does. Wonderful movie, Joyride. We are My Bloody Podcast. This is episode 92. We're going to get on a regular schedule here because we have to make it to episode 100. We're going to have a crazy, crazy episode then. But yeah, the episode 92, we're on all of the iTunes and Stitchers and Spotify's and Google's and Amazon's. And I'm Brian Kluger. Search Brian Kluger and you'll find all the Instagrams, the YouTubes, everything. Preston.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram under Blu-ray Dad, where I'm showing all my latest physical media and articles and things like that. You can also find me on Twitter at Preston Barda. You can find my writing on the Didn't Record Chronicle and freshfiction.tv, where I'm the features editor. So yeah, there's cool stuff out there. I just wrote a review on Saint Maud, quite enjoyed that one. And then there's so many movies coming out this week. Just in time for the Oscars, I guess. So they're just cramming them all down our throat.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. I hear you. So until next time, get a candy cane and get on that CB radio us.